The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
This morning I thought I would follow on the topic from last week, since I didn't quite get to the end of it. And last week was exploring different kinds of happiness, different ways in which happiness comes about in our practice, and to explore the kind of familiar way that we think about happiness, our usual way to find happiness in the world is to think about something that we want and then getting something we want or getting rid of something we don't want. This kind of movement towards creating what we like in our world, to being surrounded by what we like, to being able to not have things around us that we don't like. So there are these kind of notions of having pleasant things in our lives and being able to control our environment. Those pieces are part of how we find pleasure in our lives. And the Buddha actually acknowledged this. He said, yes, having things like this, having what we want, does bring a form of pleasure. And yet, the perspective that we usually bring to our lives is that that is what happiness is about. That if we could string together in our lives moments like that, moments where we get what we want, that if we could just string together moment after moment of having the world be just the way we'd like it to be in that moment, then that would be the best it could get. That would be happiness. And the Buddha points out that it is a form of happiness, but it is not actually the deepest form of happiness that's possible. And he explored and talked about many different kinds of happiness. I talked about several of them last week. In particular, last week, I explored the kinds of happiness that come in relationship with people that aren't dependent on particular, you know, getting something that we want. So the happiness of being generous, the happiness of offering, that when we are in a space of having that heart open and freely generous, there's a pleasure and a happiness that comes with that. The happiness of behaving in ways that are non-harming, so behaving ethically, this brings a delight to our mind because we recognize that people don't need to fear us. And we know in our hearts it creates the conditions of non-regret when we behave ethically. There's one teaching that the Buddha pointed to, the whole path beginning, unfolding from this ground of ethical conduct. It says that when we behave ethically, that it's very natural for non-remorse to happen because we're not caught by regret and thinking about what we've done and what we wish we hadn't done. When we behave ethically, non-remorse arises. And when non-remorse arises, he says it's very natural for delight to follow. And it goes from there. When one has delight, then it's very natural for joy to follow. And he talks about the progress of our practice kind of being a lawful unfolding through different kinds of happiness, essentially, different depths of happiness. So there's the happiness of ethical conduct in relationship to others, the non-remorse of that, the bliss of blamelessness, it's sometimes called. And then there's the happiness of being connected to people, just the happiness of feeling that connection, feeling love, feeling an open-hearted warmth to other people. That's also, there's a form of happiness in that, that when we wish other people well, this was a little bit of a challenge for me initially, because sometimes I think our wishing well of other people is kind of conditioned. It's like, well, I'll wish you well as long as you're not doing any better than I'm doing. Or there's some conditions on it. But when we can actually have a very unconditional heart that just wishes well, may you be happy. May you find ease and peace in your life. There's a way that that wish, it feels good. It's happiness producing to have that kind of quality in the heart, because the heart is unconstricted. The constrictedness of our heart is one of the main dampeners for happiness. And as the heart is more open and connected, there's more room for other kinds of happiness. And there are different flavors of the kinds of happiness in relationship in that way. There's love itself, metta, that feeling of just connection. There's the flavor when that love meets somebody who's struggling. That flavor of love becomes compassion. When that open heart, that love, that connection meets somebody who's celebrating, joyful, the heart resonates in joy with that person. So there's different flavors of that kind of connected love. And even compassion, there's a quality of it that has a feeling of quivering, of, ooh, it hurts a little bit. But at the same time, there's the happiness of the resonance. It's an odd kind of happiness, but it could be called a kind of happiness. And so today I wanted to talk about more the happiness that comes as we connect with ourselves, as we open to our own experience. Sometimes when I talk about meeting ourselves, as we, I think I even mentioned this in the guided meditation, that as we, maybe that was earlier, I don't remember, we're all running together. As we meet ourselves, as we open to our experience fully, I talked about connecting to the fullness of our human experience. As we do that, we are meeting ourselves, opening to our experience, and allowing our experience in a way that no one else can. In so many ways, we want to be seen. We want to be met in our lives. That's part of what motivates us, I think, in moving through our lives, is that we want somebody to reflect, you're okay, you know, to fully accept us. We want somebody else to do that for us. And I think a lot of our actions in our lives are trying to find that reflection back. Somebody let me know I'm okay. And what this practice can do is create that kind of an inner mirror that way, an inner reflection that we understand in a very deep internal way. We are okay. And it's a deep opening of the heart when we recognize that capacity to belong to ourselves, to meet ourselves, to see ourselves, to witness ourselves, doesn't require somebody else. It can happen here. And this is a form, it's like the metta for ourselves. So that is a self-reflection, a self-love. So this is a form of happiness, witnessing ourselves. I've seen when I really land in my present moment experience, sometimes it's like, every cell feels like it's drinking up the attention. It's like, yeah, the body, the mind really appreciates this kind of being seen. And it feels like a deep kind of happiness. And so this inner happiness, this is what I'd like to explore today, the kinds of happiness that come through the practice as we meet ourselves. So one of the things that happens often as we begin to actually land in the present moment and open up to our present moment experience, it's paradoxically that we actually experience more of the happiness of sense pleasure, I talked a few minutes ago about how, you know, the grasping after sense pleasures and trying to create and construct having sense pleasure in our lives is a lesser kind of happiness in a way. It's like, you know, we're standing on some peak of, you know, this, we think that's as good as it gets, but actually there are many, it's like there's fog and we're not seeing that there's many higher mountains around. So there's a kind of happiness to that, getting what we want. But it's a lesser kind of happiness. So but paradoxically, as we enter into our present moment experience, the happiness of sense pleasure can actually get stronger. We land in our experience, and even simple experience like looking up at the blue sky or seeing a tree, suddenly we recognize we're really here for it, and we recognize how beautiful it is. Part of that sense pleasure, part of the pleasure of that experience, isn't so much about the pleasantness of the experience itself. It's not so much about the pleasantness of seeing a tree, but it's about the being present for our experience. The happiness, the delight that comes with that sense pleasure as we actually land in the present moment and are noticing what's going on, partly comes because we are connected to the present moment. We are available. We are awake. So some of the pleasure comes from the awakeness itself. And some of the pleasure comes from the fact that in that place of simply being available to see a tree or to watch a bird or to hear a sound, that if we're really available for it, we are not actually grasping after it. We're not trying to hold on to it. It's just like something that's flowing through. And so the happiness of sense pleasure that we usually go for has some clinging in it. It has some grasping. And that actually diminishes that grasping because it's a constriction. It's a trying to hold on to a keep. It's like mine, mine, mine. I'm trying to keep it for myself. There's a constriction there, and that kind of dampens, in a way, the joy that can come from just being present for simple sense pleasure. And so paradoxically, in a way, as we enter into a connectedness with our experience, we experience more kinds of sense pleasure. It's a different kind of sense pleasure, though. It's not about trying to hold on or trying to keep. It's almost, well, there's this Blake poem maybe some of you are familiar with. It's like, I don't know that I'll get it exactly right, but some of you may know it. Something like, when holding to a joy, one doth the winged life destroy. One who kisses the joy as it flies lives in eternity's sunrise. Something like that. It's not quite right, but it's that flavor. That holding on to our joy just constricts it. It destroys it in a way. And yet if we just with it and let it go, it creates a different kind of joy. So this is one of the kinds of happiness that can come for us as we more fully land in our experience, in our present moment experience. And then as we really meet ourselves, we start opening to what's going on in our experience, maybe directing our attention to the breath and allowing the mind to settle down, we start experiencing the happiness of concentration. There's different flavors of this happiness too, as the mind becomes more tranquil. Just that tranquility of not being kind of bopping around can feel pleasant. as we just land with one thing. But another big piece of the happiness of concentration is that there's basically there's some states of mind that are visitors that get in the way of concentration. And these states of mind are sense desire, ill will, sloth and torpor, restlessness, and doubt. These five hindrances the Buddha talks about. They're talked about, these five hindrances, one of the main ways they're talked about as obscuring concentration. And so as we settle into a concentrated state, basically these obscurations, these coverings, Nivarana is the Pali term, and literally translated, it means covering, this word that's usually translated as hindrance. These states cover a kind of mind that settles on just being here in the present moment. And so as we can settle, as the mind can land on one experience, it begins to let go of these coverings. It begins to let go of ill will. It begins to let go of that wanting things to be a certain way. It wakes up. It's not dull. It's not sleepy. And it's also not scattered. It's collected. Those states of those hindrances, they have usually an unpleasant quality that keeps us agitated, keeps us from feeling happiness. And as those fall away, as we direct our attention to the experience of the present moment, whether it's the breath or just staying stable in the present moment, these hindrances fall away. And there's a different kind of happiness there. This one is called the bliss of seclusion, because the mind is kind of protected in that moment from all of these forces that typically are battering it around. So this is a kind of happiness that's available through the meditation practice, the happiness that comes with concentration. So there's the happiness as the mind starts to settle, as the hindrances fall away. As the concentration deepens, as the concentration becomes more collected, as the mind becomes more still, there are different, deeper levels of happiness that can come. I mentioned a few minutes ago that kind of feeling like every cell in my body was happy with this kind of attention. And that was in a state of concentration where the mind was really present for its experience. So there's some different flavors of the happiness that come with concentration. There can be just delightful, rapturous sensations that happen, pleasure that goes through the body as the mind lets go of these hindrances and it just connects with the body. It's like the body just sings with delight sometimes. Sometimes it can feel kind of energetic, like sparkly sensations or waves of pleasure. It can almost feel like orgasm, you know, just this kind of waves of pleasure. Sometimes it can get intense even. Sometimes it almost feels too much sometimes. And then as the mind settles even more fully in concentration, more of a sense of calm and tranquility begins to soften that energy of the joy and the rapture, and a deeper kind of tranquil happiness, very settled state of happiness that is not dependent on any particular conditions being a certain way. It's depending on the conditions of the concentration, but it doesn't require us to have a certain number of things. It's a state that we can train our minds to touch into, this kind of happiness, the joy, the bliss of seclusion, the joy that, the kind of delightful, bubbly joy that can come with that, and then a deeper kind of tranquil happiness that can come with concentration. So one of the supports to that, this kind of happiness that we can begin to touch into that doesn't require having certain things in the world, it's one of the supports for helping us to let go of wanting things to be a certain way. Essentially, as we touch into this deeper kind of happiness that's possible through a training of our mind, we recognize that it's actually way, way better than any kind of sense pleasure that we've had. And so the mind begins to be more interested, perhaps, in letting go of the constant grasping after things, which is kind of a, well, it's both sense desire and it's a restlessness that keeps us from that state of concentration. And we recognize, wow, you know, the mind is, it kind of begins to want to gravitate towards a deeper kind of happiness rather than gravitating towards the sense pleasure kind of happiness. And so in some ways, the happiness of concentration can be a stepping stone for us. It's not the purpose of our practice. You know, it's not the goal to just sit in bliss and sit in tranquility like that. That's not what the Buddha was ultimately pointing to as the ultimate happiness. But it's a step along the way that can help us to let go of kind of the sticky kind of happiness that we've lived so much of our life thinking, that's the way. So as we train our minds, we begin to taste a deeper kind of happiness, and that supports us in basically wanting to let go of some of that restless desire and ill will. Then there's a kind of happiness. I don't want to say this is a deeper kind of happiness so much, but it's a different kind of happiness that begins to point in the direction, to some extent, about the deepest happiness that the Buddha pointed to, which is a kind of a happiness of non-clinging, the happiness of not needing things to be a certain way. And this is a stepping stone on the way to that is the happiness that begins to arise as we start to engage in being curious about our experience. Even as we explore working with difficult states of mind, you know, as we explore being present for frustration and anxiety and anger and confusion. This is part of our practice, that opening to the fullness of our experience, we will open to difficulty because our minds have been practicing those things. They've been conditioned towards reactivity in that way. And so it's very natural as we start to notice what's going on in our experience that we'll start to notice these reactive states. And so initially it may feel like, you know, well, certainly when I first started practicing, it's like, why would I want to pay attention to this? You know, this anger, it hurts, it doesn't feel very good. But fairly quickly we can begin to recognize the benefit of attending to these kind of states when we bring a certain kind of attention to them. So bringing a non-judgmental curiosity to these reactive states. Sometimes I use the expression, can we explore what it means to be with these reactive states? Can I be with frustration instead of being frustrated? So it takes us a step back. It creates a little bit of a bigger container in which that reactive state can be held and witnessed. And there's a big difference, and you can feel the shift in your own experience as you come into that bigger container and have that curiosity as the mind, instead of being, you know, involved in the details of a frustration, it's like, oh, this thing needs to happen and I didn't get that right and so-and-so got in the way of that, you know, all of those thoughts and the story of the frustration. Instead, we step back and go, you know, human beings experience frustration, and this is this human's experience of frustration. It creates a bigger container in which we can know the human experience of frustration. And there's a radical difference in that shift. And in that moment, even, there can be a feeling of release, a feeling of some kind of ease. It's like, oh, this is just frustration. Humans experience frustration all the time, and this is what this experience is like. So there's it's like a bigger container around the frustration, and in that bigger container are the seeds of a different kind of happiness. It may not feel like happiness at the beginning, you know, it may more just be that we can kind of tolerate a feeling of, okay, yeah, I can be with this. It's okay. So maybe it feels more like an okayness. Feels like, yeah, I can be okay with this. But in contrast, in a way, to the being caught in it and feeling okay with it, there's a little kind of happiness with that. It's a form of happiness. And as we continue to strengthen that capacity to meet experience, we strengthen that capacity to just witness and be with experience. That container, the feeling of that container grows. The feeling of what it's like to witness the experience. It's almost like our attention shifts from being involved with the experience of frustration or whatever the reactive emotion is into being more involved with the container. It's like our experience shifts into the mind that is curious about being with the experience. The mind that is interested in being with that experience. The mind that is allowing that experience. And there's many flavors of beautiful states of mind. And some of them can have the flavor of happiness. And we can call them all forms of happiness in a way. Balance of mind can be a flavor of happiness. The sense of, yeah, I can be balanced while this is happening. There can even be a kind of a delight in the curiosity. It's like, wow, this is so interesting. And that the curiosity can bring a sense of delight and joy in just meeting. This is what it's like to be a human being. Wow, you know, this is what human beings experience. So there can actually be a delight that happens in that witnessing of our experience. So our practice, even as we meet our challenging states of mind, can begin to point us to the mind that is at ease, at peace, relaxed, allowing, curious, maybe even delighted at witnessing what's happening. There's a kind of a joy in the practice itself. And sometimes that joy comes from recognizing, sometimes that joy can come because we recognize how much pain we are not experiencing by having this stance. It's like, the difference between being caught by anger and witnessing anger is a vast difference of suffering. And the mind, when recognizing, it's kind of like it knows the relief of not having that suffering in that moment. And there's a great delight, a great happiness in that. And so that brings me to the next kind of happiness, which is the happiness of non-suffering. Sometimes we can see that shift in the moment as we're observing something challenging. We see ourselves move from being caught by something to, oh, this is just a state of frustration. And in that shift, we feel a reduction of the suffering. So we experience some of that happiness of lessening of suffering. But then there's also the possibility of really recognizing just basically the non-arising of suffering. Suffering's not happening. This is a subtle kind of happiness, actually. It's more like the happiness of peace, of ease, than it is a kind of a delighted, kind of energetic experience. And it can slip by us. Moments of non-suffering actually happen a lot in our day. But we are so focused on getting what we want and having some hit of getting what we want or getting rid of what we don't want and having some hit of feeling like I'm in control. We're so focused on that that we often miss times where nothing's particularly wrong. These moments happen throughout our day. We can kind of maybe orient to them a little bit by being curious about moments when things seem kind of neutral. You know, it's like sometime when you're driving and you've given yourself plenty of time to get somewhere. You don't have anywhere to get to because, you know, the getting to can be a filter that's in the way of seeing these moments of not much going on. But so you don't have anywhere to get to. And, you know, you come to a stoplight and you're just sitting there waiting. In that moment, if you can just be present for sitting there at the stoplight, you don't have anywhere to be in particular at that moment. It's just you're sitting there at that stoplight. Is anything wrong? Maybe that's a moment where you can begin to touch into the happiness of just being. Nothing particularly high or right or good in our normal way of thinking about it, and nothing particularly wrong. This in-between neutral place. No problem. We can begin to recognize there's actually moments of no problem through our day. We just often miss them. If we can begin to, oh, this is a moment of no problem. How does that feel? We can begin to taste some of the delight and the happiness of no problem. So here's an example, you know, to maybe give you a flavor of the happiness of no problem. So if you think about if you had a broken leg, you know, you have a broken leg, you've got a big cast on, you've got all kinds of constraints about getting around. You probably have to use crutches and probably can't drive yourself anywhere. You have to get somebody to drive you, you know, maybe hard to do things in the kitchen and get, you know, it's like you've got this cast on. And there may be some of the pain, too, of the broken leg, but just the kind of, there's just this kind of cumbersomeness around having the broken leg. And just, you know, thinking about how challenging it might be, you know, just the small movements of our daily life, how hard those might be. It's a subtle kind of struggle that you'd go through to get through your day having a broken leg. And now envision how it would be if in a moment that cast could be gone and you don't have to struggle anymore with the cumbersomeness of that. You can move with ease. You can navigate your house, you can drive yourself. That's the happiness of non-suffering. It's like we miss it. It's like we're in that space. There's so much of that going on for us all the time, and we miss it. So what does it feel like when nothing is particularly wrong? It's this in touching into the happiness of no problem, the happiness essentially of peace in a way. Then there's a kind of happiness of insight, the happiness of, you know, deeply understanding why our minds are doing what they're doing. A happiness that in the recognition of how the mind is kind of craving to something, the mind seeing that, oh, that's not necessary, and letting it go. There are different flavors of insight. Different ways that the mind can recognize that moment of, you know. So I talked a moment ago about the the happiness of a shift where we have a bigger container and the mindfulness can hold something challenging. At certain points in practice, as the mind is just really curious with, what is this and how does it work? At some points in that, we might actually, in that mindfulness, the mindfulness is strong enough that actually whatever that thing is, that frustration or that wanting or that confusion, whatever that is, it just vanishes. And in that moment, we experience the release of the clinging and the understanding of how that pattern worked. An example, there's so many different examples of this, but one example that may give you a flavor and maybe help point to ways that you've experienced things like this, maybe. On one retreat, I was noticing a lot of wanting around looking at people. Maybe it was my first long retreat, and we were told, you know, try to keep your gaze averted, don't look at people. And so I was following the rules. I was not looking at people. I was looking 6 feet in front of me at the ground. And if anybody walked by, it's like, I'm not looking. And it was, kind of forceful. And so there was a craving to follow the rules that was there. But there was also, I began recognizing that, you know, as people kind of, as I saw their feet come into the field of vision, it's like, there was such a craving, like, I really want to know who that is, you know? So there was this real strong desire to look at them. So this is a simple kind of craving, you know? It's not a life or death kind of craving. And yet, you know, my mind was trying to put on blinders. And at some point, I decided, wow, you know, I'm forcing myself to not look, but what's going on is wanting. So maybe I should be curious about the wanting. And so I began exploring that and watching the wanting. And at first it was that kind of bigger container where I could see the wanting coming into being and just feeling that pull and just like feeling a tractor beam. It's like gravity, you know, it's like there's somebody walking in front of me. It feels just like so hard not to look up, but I just was feeling that pull, not acting on it, and just feeling that kind of the constriction and the pain of that wanting. So that's a little bit of wisdom that's developing there. I certainly wouldn't say I felt the happiness of that. I mean, maybe there's a little curiosity. It's like, wow, that's kind of an amazing force in the mind, that wanting. And then at some point, I began recognizing that a lot of this seemed to happen when I was doing walking meditation. I was outside and people were walking around. And so I was doing walking meditation in places where there weren't too many people. And so I would be doing walking meditation for long stretches of time and not having this come up. And then I would notice that as soon as somebody entered my field of vision, they came into my peripheral vision, the wanting happened. It's like instantly feeling that constriction and that movement. It's like, wow, that's when it started getting really interesting. So there's a little bit of recognition, a little bit of insight that this wanting has a condition. So that's a little bit of insight. And there's a kind of a delight. It kind of got really cool to watch wanting pop up. And then it even got cooler because as the person kind of went through, it's like I'd feel the strength. It'd be like the strength of the wanting got stronger as they were walking here, and it would just be a little glance of the head. It was even stronger as here. It would only be a movement of the eyes. It's like, so the wanting got stronger and stronger, and then maybe the person would walk up the stairs and go in the door, and poof, the wanting would go away. The person was no longer in my field of vision. The wanting vanished. That was like such delight in that moment. It was the delight of seeing the happiness vanish, the recognition of being released from that. So that was a form of happiness. And then I started like being excited to have people like come into my field of vision so that I could watch the wanting disappear. Because it felt so cool to watch the wanting disappear. And then, at some point, I was realizing while I was watching somebody, you know, watching the wanting while somebody was in my field of vision, I realized in that moment this was an insight, and this is kind of the happiness of insight, a deeper kind of happiness that came, was that I realized I was actually holding on to the wanting in order to see it disappear. And in that moment, the wanting to look at that person just vanished. The person didn't have to not be there for the wanting to not be there. The wanting vanished, and there was no more need to watch it at all. So this is a form of insight, of understanding. So the whole of it was beginning to understand how wanting is put together in the mind through a really simple exploration. And how much the happiness of the understanding that led in the future to the happiness of the non-arising of the wanting. Because that kind of wanting just stopped on that retreat. It just didn't happen anymore. And so the insights, the understandings that come through the witnessing of experience can lead us to these other kinds of happiness. The happiness of the mind that's settled, not pulled out in wanting. The happiness of the knowing of the non-arising of suffering. So there's so many kinds of happiness that are available for us through our practice. As the Buddha said, I opened the last talk with this. Maybe I have this in my notes. If by giving up a lesser happiness, one could experience greater happiness, a wise person would renounce the lesser to behold the greater. And so we begin to recognize that the way that we habitually move through the world, the way we look for happiness habitually, it's a lesser kind of happiness. And as we move into curiosity about being with experience, connecting with our world, connecting with our relationships, we begin to experience so many different, deeper kinds of happiness. And the letting go of that habitual kind of happiness, it's not easy. It's very deeply conditioned, very deeply conditioned, at many different levels. I mean, the wanting to look at somebody, you know, that's a form of kind of a weird form of sense pleasure, you know. But it's not like the bigger kinds of wanting of, you know, wanting to have a particular job or have a certain amount of money, you know. So it's not that grosser level of sense pleasure. So it's many layers of how we crave for having control and having things that we want and wanting to construct the world the way we want it to be. And so it's not like a few times of experiencing some of these deeper kinds of happiness just lets us let go of those deep habits in one swoop. It's a staged process, and it's a gradual process. It's a gradual unfolding, the practice, a gradual releasing from these kinds of craving. And that gradual releasing of those kinds of craving leads to a gradual increase of the happiness. It's not so much it's not like there's a steadily rising curve in which we're getting happier and happier. It's got a lot of waves to it. Conditions of our mind, what's going on. You know, some days we're more able to meet experience than others. Things happen. We get news. We hear overwhelming news about the bombings in Aleppo, and our heart hurts for that. And sometimes that can create conditions for it to be harder to be present for something in our day. So we have to be very compassionate with ourselves for the gradual nature of this process. And yet, over time, we can begin to connect more and more to these different kinds of happiness that aren't so reliant on things being a certain way, but more are a product of the conditions of shaping our mind towards the direction of letting go of needing things to be a certain way. And that is said to be the deepest kind of happiness, the happiness, the complete happiness, the happiness the Buddha found was possible, the happiness of freedom, nirvana, nibbana. The definition of that happiness, enlightenment, people call it. You know, it's that word enlightenment gives you some idea about it being some like mind-blowing kind of state. But the description the Buddha gives to that is the absence of greed, the absence of aversion, and the absence of delusion. To me, that's it's an inspiring definition in a way, because it points to me that this possibility of being free of greed, aversion, and delusion is something that can happen in our life. I can envision the possibility of being free from greed, aversion, and delusion. I mean, it's not happening at this moment, but you know, I've seen little tastes of the possibility of the mind letting go of those and acting and engaging in the world from a completely different perspective. So there's this, you know, this kind of like possibility has shown itself, and it's a possible in the midst of our daily life. I think about the word enlightenment, and I think of something that transcends life. The absence of greed, the absence of aversion, the absence of delusion, the Buddha called the deepest happiness available in this very life. So, comments, questions? Yeah, and pass the mic back. Would you pass the mic back?
So, I have a question about happiness. You know, everything that you see, hear, and feel is impermanent, and it's going to actually disappear. It's really, we're living in an island of illusion. even your response is just an illusion, even though you don't think it is. Because it's just going into my mind, and I'm going into your field of awareness, but it's going to disappear.
Everything that we experience is so constructed.
That's already gone. So what I'm saying is that basically, how do you integrate happiness when you know as you get...
Well, so the
when you know, when you get, as you transcend this life that we have,
it's aligning yourself with that truth that everything is vanishing. It's the resistance to that truth is one of the fundamental reasons why we struggle. So it's as if we align ourselves with the truth that there's only quicksand, there's only things vanishing. And then arising and a vanishing and arising and vanishing. We align ourselves with that understanding. It's that's where the absence of greed, the absence of aversion, the absence of delusion land us. So it's that the if there's a feeling of, you know, happiness. The deepest kind of happiness can really only happen as we fully align ourselves with the way things actually are, and that includes that they're vanishing.
Everything vanishes.
Everything is vanishing. Even the universe is vanishing.
So our existence is like someone said our existence is like a program that someone's writing something. And that's our life. And then when that program
it's a complete transformation moment after moment. There's nothing that's stable. The illusion of stability, there's an illusion of stability that actually is functional for us in our lives. You know, if we were living in that space feeling like everything is quicksand every single moment. I mean, so there's a way that we can understand that truth and yet function with the way our mind does kind of solidify things. I mean, our perceptions, we look around this room and there's perceptions, you know, there's chairs here and people here. And, you know, and I actually, you know, so I know at a fairly deep level that whatever I'm experiencing, there's nothing that I'm experiencing that is not constructed by my mind. Everything.
Can I just bring you back to the moment for 1 second?
What would you like to say?
I want to know the relationship between happiness and that feeling of things disappearing.
As I said, it's the alignment with the truth of that. When you're aligned with the truth of everything disappearing, there's a happiness.
Are you sure about
yes.
that?
Yes. Yes, I am.
Have you experienced
yes,
that?
Yes, I have.
Give me an example.
This is along the same lines, especially when it comes to two people that I love so dearly, and those two people are my children. They're adults now. And I'm so aware of the impermanence of our moments that I don't cling to them, nor do I ever really, am I guaranteed to ever see them again. So it gives me this kind of heightened presence around them, this gratitude to be with them. I don't want to say expecting, but realizing that, you know, this is impermanent.
Yes.
These moments with these people that I love, my children, my now adult children, it's a heightened awareness that I have and a gratitude with them.
Yes, that heightened awareness of the impermanence can lead us to that. You know, it's like an appreciation for what is passing away in a sense. So there's that appreciation. It can also lead to a kind of a holding. It's like, oh no, you know.
But I'm not clinging.
Great.
I'm just appreciating.
Yeah, great. That's a kind of happiness that comes as we begin to acknowledge the truth of impermanence and don't fight it. Yeah. In the back.
Can you tell me how to achieve that through teenage years? My son's 13 and he's a different person. Well,
so in terms of the what are you talking about for yourself? How to be okay that your son is moving into the awful stage?
Or well, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, this is suffering, right? This is that kind of what you're in that moment is not the delight of, you know, appreciating that this is maybe the last moment. It's more like, yeah. And so that's part of that, the anger being triggered, that's what you get to look at. You can bring in that understanding that, yes, this may be the last time that I'll see him, but it may not touch that anger. And so that's what you get to look at that moment. It's like, ooh, yeah, that's a cruel constriction is what's happening. And probably there's a little involvement in that, either wanting him to be a certain way or, you know, wanting him to do a certain thing or not do a certain thing. So there's all of that in there. And some of it is, you know, probably wanting him to not, like, you know, do disastrous things. So, you know, there's a delicate dance there around not constricting around it and not being angry about it. But, you know, what we need to explore is just, yeah, okay, this is, moms everywhere go through this. You know, it's like, okay, so this is the human experience of mom and teenage boy years. Okay, you know, so can you hold it in a little bit bigger container? And as you hold it in a bigger container, you may be able to recognize that, you know, some part of that anger is extra. It's squeezing, it's constriction, it's got some pushing away to it. And some part of that anger has some love in it. You know, it doesn't want your son to, like, get himself in a mess. So, you know, that anger has two sides to it. And so the bigger container can help you connect to the love a little bit more. But we can't just kind of skip over the anger and the resistance. We have to open to it. So that's what I'd encourage there. It's like, can you move into the happiness of, can I know this is just the human experience of anger? That shift I talked about from being embroiled in it to being able to have a bigger container around it. And we need to stop, unfortunately. So thank you.